Welcome to the Eat Cleaner, Live Larger podcast, where award-winning coach, author, and former junk food addict Karen Nola shares her winning strategies to help you eat healthier, cut the crap, and create a life that you absolutely love.
See, I finally opened up my eyes, and I saw me coming back to life, that I'd be better.
Welcome to episode number one, my story. I thought I would share my story with you right out the gate because it will help you to get to know me better, but most importantly, to understand that I understand your journey too, because at the end of the day, we all come from the same place. We all have similar stories to share. It's just often that the details are different, but nonetheless, sometimes we can still feel very alone with our story when we don't know anyone else who is going through what we're going through. So, to set the scene, at time of recording, it is 3 months until my 50th birthday, and I can tell you that never in my wildest dreams did I imagine that approaching 50, I would be sharing my life story on a podcast with hopefully millions of people. But here we are, and actually that's a testimony to my message. That's a testimony to what I teach, how I now live my life, and of course it all started somewhere. And that somewhere is what we're going to talk about today. So my hope in sharing my story is that you take at least one golden nugget from it that you can apply to your own life that maybe will inspire you or give you hope or make you feel comforted or understood. Because as you'll find out as I share my story, I have been through a lot of highs, a lot of lows, but ultimately I'm here to share the story because I know that ultimately we can triumph. So, without further ado, let's get started. So, born in 1972 in good old Essex, a part of England that often is ridiculed, but we'll leave that for another day. But born to a very quote unquote normal family, nothing particularly exceptional going on, and just living a quote-unquote normal life, right? Now, interestingly, as a toddler, I would eat Brussels sprouts whole, and I would literally gorge on them, yet from about the age of 4, hated them ever since. So, an interesting start, considering the journey that I went on, because my journey through childhood was actually full of junk food. It was just about all I would eat. I'd have the occasional apple, banana, maybe a satsuma. I like tomatoes, a tiny bit of iceberg lettuce. I'd eat cooked mushrooms, cooked potatoes, and that was about it. Didn't like nuts, didn't like vegetables. I would joke that the only nut that I would eat was a donut, and that was the truth. Not particularly funny, but some people laughed. And that really just about sums up my childhood in terms of food. It was just full of junk. I would eat fries for every meal, just about, except breakfast. I would snack on chocolate bars, whole pints of full-fat dairy milk, drink cans of Coke. My favourite was Cherry Coke as a teenager. And everything I ate with fries was some kind of processed meat. So sausages, burgers, saveloys, sometimes fried fish, but it was more meat than fish. And The interesting part about the childhood and how things unfolded was that actually when I was 6 years old, my parents divorced, both remarried the same year in 1982, and my mother married a butcher, which was, well, a curveball, I guess, in my story, although I didn't know it at the time. But the fact that he was a butcher led to us a few years later owning a butcher's shop. And we had this shop in a small village near Newmarket in Suffolk, the international capital of horse racing. And in the shop, I would do just about everything to do with, well, everything. I would sell cigarettes, sweets, vegetables, fruit, the meat. We even rented videos back in those days, and you name it, I just about did it all, including slicing the ham, making the sausages, and making something that was called pet mince, which effectively was, and this is the gross part, so be ready, this was where I would put turkey necks into a mincer, and they would obviously come out as mince, and that would be sold as pet food. Now, it was during this mincing situation one day when I was 14 that I had a moment, you might call it a light bulb moment, a life-changing moment, but it was definitely a moment and I still remember that moment to this day. And as I was busy putting these turkey necks through the mincer, this inner voice just said to me, "This just ain't right." In my classic Essex accent. And I just stood there thinking, this is really weird. Like, dogs are going to be eating the necks of turkeys. Like, this just doesn't make sense to me. And to be clear, you know, at this point, I was still eating a lot of meat myself, but some of the things just didn't add up. And so I started asking more questions, and things that I was asked to do in the shop to make various things and prep various things, I started being a lot more open-minded, curious, and thoughtful overall, as in, why do we do this? Does this sound like a good idea? Does it make any sense? And so another example of this was the first time I ever got put on the task of making sausages. Now, probably everyone listening has eaten sausages at some point in their life, but how often do we think about exactly what they're made from, what goes into them, and even what the sausage skin is? And so that was another big wake-up call for me, because my stepfather set me up with the sausage-making machine, and in the sink was a load of cold water and some very weird looking things, which turned out to be pig's intestines, right? I kid you not. And I said to him, "What are they for?" And he said, "Well, that's the sausage skin." And I had another moment where I was like, oh my God, pig's intestines are sausage skin. That's what it's all stuffed into. And it was kind of one of those moments where you screw your face up a bit and think, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I'm eating that stuff. But we get so used to eating what we're eating according to what we're raised on and what everyone else is eating that oftentimes we don't think about it, we don't question it. And even when if we do find these things out, sometimes we can just dismiss them as if, well, oh, okay, I guess that's just what they're made from then. And so to a certain extent, that's what happened in terms of me thinking, oh, I guess that's just what they're made from then. But there was another part of me, the same part that was freaked out by the turkey necks making pet mince, that said, this seems really odd. Like, as a human being, do I really want to be consuming the intestines of a pig? Like, literally that straightforward of a question. Now, that was just the start of it, because as I was busy putting stuff through the sausage-making machine, my stepfather presented three large plastic tubs, each full of a different coloured kind of mixture. One was pink, one was yellow, and I think one was white. You've got to remember this was a long time ago. But basically, one was colouring, one was flavouring, and one was preservative. And he was scooping copious amounts of these things into the mixture that was going through the sausage machine. And even then, at that age, when I honestly didn't think anything about what I was eating, said to him, gosh, that seems like a lot. And he said, trust me, this is very little compared to most commercial brands of sausages. And that also freaked me out because I could see how many handfuls of this stuff he was pouring in to the mixture. So that's just a couple of instances in my own history where the cog started turning and I started asking questions. And from there, my curiosity about vegetarianism and why people go vegetarian started to unfold. And so forward maybe a year or so, I was giving a talk in my English class at school about vegetarianism. Now, to be clear, I was not vegetarian and I was not ready to go vegetarian, but I was interested in being vegetarian based on the first-hand experiences I had had in the butcher shop. Because, yes, there was pet mince and sausages and burgers, but also I was moving around whole carcasses of pigs and pieces of animals. And honestly, when I think about it now, it does make me feel quite disgusted. But that was how it was back then. And that was part of my everyday life, even though I found it quite gross. There was another part of me that just saw it as completely normal. And so I had these two different aspects of me, and they weren't battling at all. They were just kind of quietly coexisting next to each other, but they were both very much alive and both very much thinking and doing and trying to put the pieces together of this equation of eating and also the issues that were personal to me around food, which I'll get to in a minute. So in my English class when I was 15, gave my talk on vegetarianism, and then at the end I asked for a show of hands and I asked, how many of you have considered going vegetarian? And I would say, let's say the class was about 25 of us teenagers, I would say maybe 3 or 4 hands went up. And then I said, okay, and how many of you are vegetarian? And no hands went up. And then how many of you want to go vegetarian? And there wasn't so much a show of hands, but there was one voice I remember that came out of nowhere and said, I just enjoy eating meat too much. And that was just not necessarily a light bulb for me because I already knew it, but just hearing someone say it and recognizing that taste was trumping any kind of emotion around it or any thoughts around the background to meat production and everything, that was just another moment in my life that really stood out as notable. So coming back to my own story around food, the butcher shop side of things was really just eye-opening from a content perspective, as in, oh gosh, I didn't know that happened, and I didn't know that looked like that, and I didn't know that came from there. So that was one aspect of my journey, and it was certainly pivotal, and it was certainly very informing of what was to happen. However, behind all of that, in my day-to-day life, I personally was struggling with my own weight, my body image, puberty, and all that goes with that. And so at the age of 14, which was when I was busy making those burgers and sausages and all the rest of it, I actually was a size 14, which in the US is a size 10. Over here in the UK, it's a size 14, which for someone of my frame and my height was actually too much. And also, let's not mince our words. I look chunky, very chunky. I'm naturally very curvy anyway, but because I was chunky, I tended to wear clothes that weren't very fitted, which, as many of you know, is a classic error, actually, because it just makes you look twice as big as you actually are. But I did it. And also another reason that kept me dressing in a probably quite unflattering way was events in my personal life that I know many of you listening are going to be able to relate to in one way, shape or form. Now, before I get into what happened, I do want to take a moment to pause here and just talk a little bit around this before I get into the detail of my story, because I've been coaching women now for over 20 years, in fact, heading towards 25 years. And one of the themes that comes up over and over and over again in food coaching is the topic of women overeating in order to protect themselves. They will gain weight in order to feel safe, to feel unattractive. And this may be a conscious decision or an unconscious decision. A lot of the time it's unconscious. But women will use food as a way to buffer themselves from the outside world, from unwanted attention, and from all that comes with that. And so my first experience of this happened when I was 14. And it was very close to home. So close, in fact, it was in my own home. And it was the early hours of one weekday morning. And my stepfather decided, I don't know why, but he decided that he was going to come into my bedroom at about 5:30 a.m. wearing just his underpants and in a state of arousal. And he sat on my bed and basically tried to make a move on me. Now, even now, it still affects me to think about it. I've certainly done a lot of work around it, forgiveness, etc. And in fact, my stepfather is no longer alive. But it was definitely a life-changing moment for me, because even though nothing of a huge consequence happened, it was enough for me to feel very wary about attracting male attention, because obviously it was unwanted, it made me feel vulnerable, and I didn't like the feelings that went with it. And so, totally unconsciously, because I don't remember ever consciously thinking, okay, now I need to gain more weight, now I need to dress in such and such way. It was all unconscious. But I started going out into the world as a teenager and then a young woman, really playing down my look, really trying not to be seen, and really having a love-hate relationship with my body and to some extent with food, although I did enjoy the food, I will say that. And I loved eating chips, also known as fries. I loved drinking the milk and the Coke and all of that stuff. And I loved eating crisps, potato chips, and eating chocolate chip cookies, which takes me to a funny story, but a true story, when I was 18. So this was when things really came to a head. And I was in the US on a school exchange trip, and we were there for 3 weeks in total. It was brilliant. It was the first time I'd seriously been outside of the UK, apart from to France on a day trip. And it was an incredible time with school friends and teachers and my host family. And I learned firsthand that, generally speaking, those in America eat a lot more than us in the UK, although I'm sure we're catching up fast. But at that point in history, that's what the situation was. And so I was eating these really huge helpings of food. And the food that my host family made was really delicious. And so I was having sometimes double, sometimes triple helpings of things. And I didn't even realize it, but I was packing on the weight. And while I was over there, I developed this huge crush on chocolate chip cookies, so much so that the host family had a t-shirt made for me that said Cookie Monster on it. They thought it was hilarious, and so did I. But meanwhile, the pounds were piling on. And by the end of the trip, I actually had gained 8 pounds in 3 weeks. And I didn't know it until I got home. And in fact, by the end of the trip, I couldn't zip my jeans up anymore. And I actually accused my poor host of shrinking my jeans in the wash, which obviously is not the case, but I was quite adamant that it was. But when I got home, this was really where the biggest turning point in my journey happened. And this is what I call my mirror moment. And so I stood naked, God help me, in front of a full-length mirror in the bathroom, the sun streaming in the window, and I saw everything. The cellulite, the chub, the fat, the everything, the things that we as women never want to look at. And yes, I had gained 8 pounds, but more than that, it was seeing my 18-year-old body looking like this. And I remember clearly the thought that went through my head was, if I look like this at 18, what on earth am I going to look like when I'm 30, 40, 50? And it scared the living daylights out of me. Now, the problem I had was that I didn't know what on earth to eat instead. You know, clearly I knew that food was the problem. It wasn't like I just woke up one day and there it was. But I didn't know how to eat any differently. And I didn't even know what I should eat, let alone how to prepare it and all the rest of it. It was like this big, massive black hole of a question mark. Like, I did not understand food at all. All I knew was that I liked fried food, I liked junk food, that most of our food came out of boxes, tins, went in the microwave or the deep fat fryer, and I didn't know where to start. And that was where it all began for me, with the desire to basically not look overweight and hate my body, but also with a curiosity as to, well, what is going to be the perfect way of eating for me that enables me to have the body that I want, but to still love the food? Because my fear, like a lot of people, was that you have to choose one or the other. You either love what you eat and hate your body, or you love your body and hate what you eat. And I was pretty sure that even though life could be tough and challenging, that there had to be a way where you could have the best of both worlds. And that's where my journey started. And so that was me at 18. And after that, a lot changed. Life has a funny way of showing up for us when we most need it. And within the following year, there was a lot of upheaval in my family life. My mother and stepfather split up. I was in a relationship that I no longer wanted to be in. And long story short, I ended up leaving Newmarket and moving to Essex again, where I was brought up, and ended up working in London. I worked in children's book publishing, which I absolutely loved. And I lived with my father and my stepmother for a short time. And during that time, my eyes were opened to a whole new way of eating, because compared to my mother and stepfather, my father and stepmother ate a lot more healthfully. And so that was January of 1992. And when I moved in with them, I gave up meat immediately and just ate fish and learned to love vegetables because of my stepmother's cooking. So that was a massive breakthrough. And then I started reading voraciously as I became totally fascinated and immersed in the world of healthy eating, because I wanted to be a vegetarian, and finally I could, now that I was away from my former home. But I still had the problem of what on earth do I eat? And also, the rest of my family were convinced that if you went vegetarian, you would either die of malnutrition or you would end up looking very skinny and pale. And I felt pretty sure that not all vegetarians died or were skinny and pale, but I needed to figure out how that wouldn't be me. And so read tons of books, and working in London was really helpful for that because it enabled me to have access to the best stuff in terms of whole food shops and bookstores and live events, workshops and all that kind of stuff. And so I just literally immersed myself in it. And when I moved to London, I lived just off of Tottenham Court Road, which is just off Oxford Street. And I worked also just off of Oxford Street. So I'd have a 15-minute walk to work, which was straight past an awesome bookshop. So I'd go in the bookshop quite a few times a week to see what was in there. And it was books, honestly, that changed my life. And the first book that really had the biggest impact on me was a book called Fit for Life. And if you're in my kind of age group and have been into health food for some time, then you probably remember it because it was an absolute classic in the 90s. And it was written by an American couple called Harvey and Marilyn Diamond. And it made the whole topic of healthy eating just so clear, straightforward and inspiring. And most importantly, easy to implement. And so I started making changes right away. And then when I'd finished that book and I felt ready for more because I was so revved up and experiencing benefits of eating cleaner, not just being vegetarian now, but now I was eating cleaner overall. So that helped me to experiment with veganism. And then one day I was in a bookshop, the same bookshop, and a book kind of jumped off the shelf, as it were, at me. And this book was called Raw Energy by Leslie Kenton, also a classic from that era. And I remember reading the back cover, and on the back cover, it talked about live food versus dead food. And it was the first time I'd ever heard food talked about in this way. And live food, meaning food that has been, that is unprocessed, hasn't been cooked, effectively raw food. And dead food being food that has been cooked and processed because there's no life force in it anymore. Now, this was another huge moment in my life. It was like a switch just flicked inside of me. It was a complete light bulb moment because I thought, my gosh, I have done so much research, so much reading, so much experimenting, but this is the missing piece, the whole concept of live food versus dead food. And so I threw myself gung-ho into experimenting with raw food. Now, at this point, please bear in mind that even though I was eating cleaner, most of my food was still cooked. So even though it was a lot healthier than before, it was cooked beans, cooked vegetables, cooked rice, cooked potatoes, bread, and so on. And so, roughly speaking, I guess about 10% of my diet was raw food at that point. Now, here was a book that was telling me the more raw food that I would eat, the better I would feel. And it made sense to me. It really made sense. And so I started experimenting. I ate more fruit. I ate more salad. I would have a salad with my rice, my potatoes, my pasta instead of cooked vegetables. And very soon I started experimenting with superfoods like chlorella, spirulina, bee pollen, all that kind of thing. And I have to tell you, everything changed. It was like night versus day. My energy went through the roof. I dropped weight without trying. People at work kept asking what I was doing. And in fact, my energy got so high some days, I felt like I could run up the walls like a cat in a thunderstorm. I didn't do that. That would be something else. But I felt like I could. And also to note that I was also exercising once or twice a day because I lived on the same street as the YMCA. And so I would literally walk past that to and from work. So I would go in first thing in the morning and have a swim. Then I would go to work and then I'd come home and I might do yoga or do circuit training. It was a lot. It was a lot, but it was great and I had the energy to do it. And also I was like 19, 20 years old. So you would hope that I had some decent energy. But my body was transforming before my very eyes. But not just that, my mood, my thinking, my joie de vivre, all of it went through the roof. And I literally felt like I had just discovered the biggest secret to healthy eating ever discovered. So fast forward from there, I started researching more about raw food because I thought I need to know more. I need to find out more about this stuff because this is amazing. Now, of course, back then it was seen as very odd, to say the least. I mean, even veganism was seen as weird back then. So raw food was seen as like super weird. And yet the results just overruled everything. I mean, there was no denying the effects it was having on me. It was a first-hand experience and no one could tell me otherwise because I was living in the body, I was feeling the feelings and having this extraordinary energy and weight loss. And so one day I remember I came across an advert. It was a small black and white text ad at the back of the vegetarian magazine and it talked about raw food. And it was from an organization called the Fresh Network, which I'd never heard of before. But it was saying that it had a book list for raw food books and to send a stamped addressed envelope. Yes, it was back in those days, to this address, and that you would get a mail order catalogue by return. Well, again, long story short, because there was a lot that happened here, but I ended up joining the network. I became its number one fan. And a few years later, I actually took over the network. And that was in August of 98. And it was a dream of mine. You know, I had absolutely fallen in love with the way that raw food made me look and feel. I'd fallen in love with the network itself because of the amazing service it was offering. And so when the owner and founder decided that she couldn't run it any longer, because I'd expressed interest over the previous years, she asked me if I would run it. And ironically, at first I turned it down, but then I changed my mind a few weeks later, and luckily the opportunity was still there. So I went on to run the Fresh Network for 8.5 years, did tons of stuff during that time. We had a extensive mail order division. We were the first people in Europe to sell raw chocolate powder. So that's a claim to fame, which is always a nice one. We hosted the world's leading educators on raw food, people such as David Wolf, Paul Neeson, Frederick Patenaude, Chad Sarno. The list just goes on and on. Brian Clement, Gabriel Cousins, you name it, we hosted them. We had an annual 3-day festival called the Fresh Festival. We published a full colour glossy magazine called Get Fresh. And in amongst that, I taught raw food classes myself, ended up being for 10 years. I started coaching people and I also became a mother during that time to my son Luke, who will be turning 20 this year. And so it was a magical time. Quite honestly, it was the time to be involved in that world. It was all going on. People were bowled over with the, not just the energy they experienced, but even the health conditions that got cleared up. And people realized the power of eating food in its natural, unprocessed state. And it was truly mind-blowing at times. Some of the stories that I heard, some of them I featured in my first book, or second book actually, Raw Food Made Simple. The first book I ever wrote was co-authored with Susie Miller, who founded the Fresh Network, and that was called Feel Good Food, A Guide to Intuitive Eating. And that was a huge goal of mine, to be published. You know, after working in children's book publishing for a number of years, I left London because I wanted to be an author. And I didn't know how it was going to happen, but it did. And everything came together. I left London. I co-authored the book. I ran the Fresh Network. And I also worked in a meditation center during that time, which also was a hugely wonderful part of my life and opened me up to the power of meditation and all that goes with it. And so a really amazing period of my life. And like I say, I ran the Fresh Network for 8.5 years. Now, out the other side of that, when I split up with Luke's father and we went our separate ways, I created a new business called The Raw Food Coach. And I went out under my own steam, and it was hugely successful. I was very nervous at first because I'd been used to hiding behind an organization. So to go out under my own name, albeit with a moniker, The Raw Food Coach, it was a scary prospect, especially as a single mother, but it worked out fantastically well. And that heralded the next chapter of my life, where I was proactively promoting raw food under my own name, writing more books, coaching thousands of people, classes, programs, you name it. It was the next incarnation of my work. And that went from the end of 2006 to around 2016. Had a change of direction in that time where I focused more on helping women to develop personally and spiritually so that they could step into their potential. Then I circled back around into raw food again, bringing in more of the personal development stuff. And then during the pandemic, like a lot of people, that's where a lot of things changed. And I started working on an altogether new project, which is what we're here with today, which is the whole message of Eat Cleaner, Live Larger. So through my work today, which brings us firmly and squarely to this present moment in time, I'm here to help you, support you, inspire you, and guide you into cleaning up your diet and living your bigger life to whatever degree you feel ready for. It's a journey. There's so much fun to be had on the journey, so much to be won on the journey, so much to be experienced. And also, it's the journey that keeps on giving. You know, I have found through my own personal experience that the cleaner my diet became, the better I felt physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, which of course helps us to become a better version of ourselves and to step into our potential, which makes us happier for more selfish reasons, but also able to give much more to those we love and even the wider world, from all the extra energy and passion and joy and purpose that goes with it. So if you are ready to live a happier, healthier, more expansive life, then keep listening, because every episode from here on in is going to be all about you. So whatever your background, whatever your story, whatever your challenges, trials, tribulations, your history with food, your body, your self-esteem, please know that I have your back. I understand. I've been there. And I suppose I really should end my story, at least for now, in sharing that here, as I approach the big 5-0, I'm literally in the best shape of my life and in the best place of my life, and it's specifically because of the journey that started with food. So here's to an amazing future for all of us, and I have so many amazing things to share with you: ideas, recipes, concepts, strategies, tips, you name it. I'm going to bring it all and give it to you so that you too can eat cleaner and live larger for the version of yourself that you've always wanted to be. Hey there, I'm so happy that you joined me for today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed the episode and I look forward to sharing more with you very soon. In the meantime, if you are ready to start making changes, then hop on over to eatcleanerlivelarger.com and download the Eat Cleaner Live Larger roadmap. Let's get your journey to health, happiness and vitality started today.